Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 14th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Scott, last night, of course, most people listen to us on Friday, so we'll say 2 nights ago, but last night was a pretty interesting evening. When I say interesting, I mean god-awfully stick-a-knife-in-my-eye suck.
Oh, yet another t-shirt for the show.
Where it didn't suck for one individual, Mr. Edward M111. All right, I'm a believer. He did it again. Wins his 4th banana in 7 events. You know what? That's it. They're not bananas anymore. They're Eddies.
They're Eddies.
All right. You guys are competing for the Eddies now. We're going to have to rename the series. This is ridiculous. How good is this guy?
It is crazy. And, you know, I updated our website today with Eddie's name for his 4th win. And I got to think, if people just come to the Ape site and they don't really haven't played and don't really know, they probably think that this is kind of like, you know, a home game.
Yeah, like a 5-player tournament.
With like 6 people and just happens to be the one guy. But, I mean, these are like 50, 60, 100 player fields.
This is insane.
And he's won 4 out of 7. I'm bowing down. I am in awe.
You know,
the pro from Tennessee.
And, you know, it was fun, too, because Zorag, our, I guess we call him Uber Forum poster, won heads up with him. They had a nice little heads up match, and it was nice to see Zorag go deep, finish second.
And then Bernice Q, boy, I tell you, somebody who has really bad luck in Apes is poor Bernice. Just seems to get snapped off all the time. She finished 3rd, so and I didn't end up watching the final table, so maybe she got snapped off there too. But that's a good finish there. And then 4th was Poker Geek MN. He's always at the final table.
Yeah, our defending player of the year. And Bernice was at my table for a little while. When she came, I was like, Brooklyn in the house! And she was all happy, and she was doing well at my table. And then I dunked off all my chips. So it was just a bad night for me, every which way but loose. You know. And then afterward, I played cash games and got 2-outed for my whole role, essentially. So just, man, I got to tell you, I don't know. I feel that break coming again, Scott. I feel the break. It's coming. I've lost more money in the last week between live and online than I had in a long time. So the break is coming.
2 words for you, buddy. Lottery ticket. You thought I was going to say limit hold'em, but no. I think you're beyond that now. You're definitely going to have to play the lotto now.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I figure if I got, you know, if all of my losses are coming on luck, then maybe I'll have winnings on luck in a different game.
Yeah.
I don't know.
See, that's a class is half full kind of way of looking at it, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Now, I'll also try to make you feel better by totally laying bare just how god-awful terrible I was last night in Apes. It's one of those things where when you get booted, you're like, oh, man. Am I actually even going to be able to show my face in a poker room or an online event ever again? You know, Chris, we just finished these great series of Poker 101 classes, right? And getting ready to hopefully gear up to do some new ones pretty soon. And we had a lot of fun in them. And I can't tell you, you could probably tell me, because you got that little Rain Man thing going on. You're probably a little ticker in your head. How many times in the little labs that we do, in these Poker 101 classes, when we deal out live hands and critique these players, do we say, don't get into a pot with a big card baby kicker?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably in the thousands, and we've only done like 60 classes. Usually it's seven hands in a row with the same guy. And we tell him, you know, hey, what are you trying to hit with that hand? If you hit your top pair, you're going to be outkicked. You're going home. If you hit the small pair, it's the small pair. You're probably, you know, not going to be very good anyhow. So what happens? I get a hand. It's folded around the button. Just limps. Scary. Small blind just limps. I got king four. Of course, I'm not going to get crazy. Check. Flop comes. King high. Small blind bets out. What do I do? I should fold, right?
Yeah.
I should fold. I should. I know it. Everything in my body says fold, but I'm like, oh, I'm going to raise. And, of course, you know, I do the next worst thing in poker, the min raise. At that point, I look down. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Again, I lose track of the blinds. Terrible. So it was 150, 300 at that point. He bet 300. I'm like, oh, 300, that's a lot. min raise is probably going to do the trick. No, it's not. Never does. Min raise, and I look down. Oh, shoot, I just left myself with 600 chips left. So absolutely brutal. What I should have folded, what I should have done is folded. If I didn't fold, I needed to shove. There's no calling. There's no min raising. There's shoving. And you know, if I shove, maybe I get him to fold. I doubt it, though. So, of course, I had nothing left on the turn. I had to shove all in. And, of course, he had king eight. You know, a bigger baby kicker than me. Boom, gone. And I look down and I'm like, oh, Scott, you are the worst poker player to ever play poker ever. And you're out there teaching people how to play.
Yeah. It happens. Sometimes you lose focus, you know, especially when you're in the comforts of your home and, you know, you're not totally in the moment because Hardcastle McCormick is on in the background.
Hardcastle McCormick, love it.
I don't know where that came from either. I've never watched that show in my life. I never watched that show ever.
You could have gone A-Team or Knight Rider or something like that, you know, more popular. But no, you would be obscure. I like that.
Well, we teased Edward enough. we teased Edward enough to get him to finally call the right number. And you know, I will say this: the one highlight of my evening was very early on in the table. I had pocket jacks and raised, and he called me. I think he called me in a blind. I'm pretty sure it was. He was at my table, and the flop came all unders with a 5, 4, 10 or something. And he bets into me. I raise him, and then he re-raises, and I laid it down. I laid down jacks. I was like, I got a feeling he's got a set here. And he showed me a set of fives. And it was like the highlight of my evening, because from there on, I played like an idiot. I actually survived for a while, got my money in bad and sucked out. And I was like, hey, all right, I'm going to win eights because I'm playing like an idiot, you know? And now I still got eliminated. So that was my highlight of the evening, was against Edward. So let's see what Edward has to say.
Hey, Chris and Scott, this is Edward M111. I think I got the right number this time. I just want to call guys and tell you I'm still shocked and amazed and probably won't fall asleep for a couple hours, excited that I won my fourth banana. I can't get over it. Zoreg, man, that was a great heads-up match. I thought we were going to be going for hours there. Like I said, just thrilled and excited, guys. Chris, I was glad to have you at my table. Sorry, I almost had you out there early. Got away from that hand, so it's a great game, guys. Keep up the show and everything. Hope to be talking to y'all maybe one more time. Thanks, bye.
Hey, look at that. He even mentioned my laydown to him, so that made me feel pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, congrats again, Edward. That's just amazing. And the good thing is I procrastinated. I didn't send him out his autographed Joe Navarro book, so now I can tuck that all in one package.
Very good.
We did win, Chris. We saved on postage.
That makes my big loss last night all the more special.
All right, well, the next event in the Edward M. Intercontinental Poker Series is May 29th. That's noon on Saturday for Raz. And, of course, Edward's not a no-limit hold'em specialist anymore. He won that Badoogie banana, so
yeah.
He'll probably just run roughshod over the table then, too.
Yeah.
And, of course, the free roll for that will be 1 week earlier on May 22nd, also at noon, always on PokerStars. And that password is anti-up. 2010, and hopefully we'll see you guys there.
Now you just got back from a real quick little jaunt over to the other coast of Florida, and you went there to go to a meeting about what we're going to have is finally some no limit poker here in Florida, some true real poker. And what was that session like? That must have been pretty wild.
Yeah, it's, you know, Florida poker players have really gotten used to the fact that, you know, even when a law gets changed, they had to wait to see how the state division actually interprets the law and see how they're going to stick it to them. And so this was a session actually put on by the division to kind of you know, take some feedback and get some direction on what folks were hoping to see, or maybe answer questions, you know, ease some fears. And I think that's exactly what happened. They did two sessions. They did a morning one that let a bunch of players come in and ask questions, and then the second one where they kind of gave some direction to the card room managers about where they're headed in enforcement. And, you know, they made some good it was real positive, I think. I'm real excited, and there's a lot of information that came out of it. I'm not going to waste a lot of time on the show with that, but you could definitely go to annieupmagazine.com, click on our news section, and look for the story I wrote that kind of gives more feedback there. I mean, obviously things are changing, but come July 1st, definitely no limit poker. They said, hey, we're not going to put any crazy caps on it. Law is clear. No limits. Have fun. Have at it. In fact, actually, I think he said something like that. Have at it, or, you know, let's get ready to rock, or something really funny like that. So,
and, you know, in our next issue, Don Baruch, our World Series of Poker bracelet winner who's writing for us now, writes a column about how not to go broke by July 2nd, and I'm more worried about me going broke before July 1st now. I won't even be able to enjoy these new limits because I don't have any money left. It's killing me.
Hey, you can always play on PokerStars' great free money site.
That's true. That's true.
All right, well, Chris, we got an amazing amount of feedback on last week's show. So much that we're not going to go through it all this week, you know, because we want to, you know, keep this show less than 6 hours. but we got a couple things. We got three back-to-back calls. People are really enjoying using the hotline now all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's as if they've discovered, you know, the wheel or something.
Or sliced bread. So the first one comes from a longtime listener, Lauren, and he has his own take on advice for the mailbag last week, where the gentleman wanted to know whether he should be playing deep stack version of the current level or move up in levels.
And I would say it depends on if he ever wants to move into live games. Live games play much deeper generally than online games. So if he's planning on staying online, then he can just move up in stakes. If he's planning on eventually moving to live games, then he should give the deeper stack game a chance and make sure he gets used to and comfortable playing at a much deeper stack. Anyway, thanks for the great show as always, and I'll catch you guys soon. Bye.
That's a good point. He makes a good point there. I kind of alluded to that too about getting better and what it plays like differently live. So I think it's a good point that he made about, you know, if you want to play live, then, you know, the deeper the stack, the more realistic it would be. So that's a good point he makes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's always a good reminder, too, that live and online are very different animals.
Yeah, very.
Think about it that way. I mean, the next call, I kind of really enjoy. You know, I figure people might find some humor in our squabbles with the TSA agents, our throwdowns, if you will. And, you know, I'm glad to see that there are people out there that have been brutalized more than I was in losing my toothpaste. And one of them was another longtime listener, Brett Ott. And let's listen to his indignation.
Hey, it's Brett Ott in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I got to say, I can beat you on your story of your air travel woes. You think you got it bad throwing away your toothpaste? Had to throw away my underwear. Yeah, I know. This was before the whole full body scanner and plastic baggie requirements. But you know how when you set off the metal detector and you walk it again thinking somehow this will work, and it never does. And then they wand me, and I take off my belt, and I still fail the metal detector test, and then they find the rivets in my Levi's are setting it off. But they wand my family jewels, and that sets it off, too. And I'm thinking, what in the world could be down there? And then I realized that the baton on my fly of my boxers is metal. So I'm shoeless, and they say I can't go through until I stop setting it off. And my bags are already through, and they won't let me go get them. And so I go to the bathroom in my socks, and I try ripping off the button, but no dice, so I throw them away. And let me tell you, the guy that saw me do that when I left the stall had to think I was up to something kind of funny business throwing my underwear away and not having any shoes on. So I come back to the wonderful security folks and walk right on through, and the security lady asked me what metal I had on, and I said, you owe me one pair of underwear. And so thanks again for the laughs, guys. Keep it up.
Really? You got a button on your underwear?
I know. Here's the thing, Brett. You know, I want to feel bad for you, but, dude, the underwear at Walmart is just as good as the fancy underwear at the Abercrombie and Fitch, man. So.
Oh, my God. You know, I know it's boring in Nebraska, but do you have to put metal on your underwear to spice things up? Really? Oh, man. That's hilarious. Wow. Studs on his clothes, buttons on his underwear. Man, that must have been an interesting flight, too. You know, you're out there, you know, there's only a thin layer of gabardine between you and the rest of the passengers. Oh, commando on the plane.
I'm reasonably sure that even if my toothpaste is on eBay, that Brett's undies probably are not.
No, some hobo in Lincoln is wearing them now because he went through the garbage and found these half-torn boxers with a button on them.
Oh, my God. That's great. All right, Chris. Our final one, too, comes from, I believe it's Tom in Massachusetts. Again, I can't get these first names right. I can't hear him. I try hard. And, of course, he's calling about the fact that I couldn't get the first name right on the last one. So let's listen to what Tom, if that's your real name, from Mass, had to say.
Hey, Scott. Tom McDonald up here in Massachusetts. Just listen to the podcast. I hate to break this to you, big fella, but Rick James died back in 2004. So if that's to Rick James, it's your super freaky pal. Unfortunately, he's come back to the grave to haunt you for your next dream. Hope all is well, guys. Keep up the great work. Appreciate the show. Thanks. Bye.
You know, I think afterwards, too, I listened carefully, and I think the person's name was Nick James, but even I couldn't tell. But, you know, Rick James is dead, you know.
Yeah, you know, I kind of knew that. I was trying to use a little artistic license. But, you know, you always beat me down when I try to use an artistic license, too.
Yeah,
so I should just give it up, because there's no acceptance of artistic license anymore out there.
You know, you use that as this huge broad stroke to cover all your mistakes. You know, I love how you do that. From now on, you know, the taxes, you know, you're getting, you know, the IRS on your ass. I was using artistic license with the numbers. I didn't know I had a claim and all that, you know. Artistic license. Oh, okay, Mr. Wong, you're okay. We won't send you to prison.
It is a nice little form of immunity, isn't it?
Jeez.
Well, you know, Rick James, RIP, and you're super freaky when you're around.
When you were around.
Tom, or whatever your name is, again, this will be this week's hotline call. So we're going to send you a sheet of uncut J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Anti Yelp. And again, a reminder that this very popular item will be the swag offering for the month of May and June from Jason at J-Design.
Now, don't forget the phone number for the hotline is 813-448-1120. So be sure to call like these other nice folks, and maybe you'll win something from us as well. Hey, you know, it's time for the Anti Up News Desk, and I always like it when we do it on Skype like this, because then I have no idea what's coming, because you're ruffling the papers over there on your desk, and it's always exciting. So let's hear what you got to say.
Well, let's hope you know what's coming second, since you like to get the second
item. Well, it's my item. You have your items, I have my item.
It's going to be pretty boring if you don't. All right, here we go. Douglas Rennick this week pleaded guilty to violating the Wire Act by processing payments between online poker sites and players. Rennick agreed to forfeit $583 million. That's a lot of money, Chris.
Man, that's a lot of cash.
I also agreed to cooperate with authorities and faces 12 months in prison when he will be sentenced. Forbes magazine says the plea is an indication that federal authorities' probes into the online gaming industry aren't abating under the Obama administration as many thought they would.
Yeah, you know, I have to admit, I am a little disappointed. I really thought that it might be a little different. But maybe it's because enough of his plans haven't failed yet, and he needs to have one more thing not work out, and then he'll go to the, hey, I can make money regulating poker thing. And so let's root for, like, you know, healthcare to, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what it is that we need to have fail before he goes to it. But, yeah, it's pretty sad.
Yeah, let's hope so. And a couple more things that are really disturbing about this. One, the fact that, I'll just give you $583 million.
I know.
It makes me think that there was a lot more money involved in this than there was. And then the biggest thing here is he pleaded guilty to the Wire Act. And for the longest time, folks have been saying, hey, the Wire Act does not apply to online wagering.
Right.
The internet was nowhere near being invented back in 1964 or whatever the Wire Act was.
Right.
So the fact now that somebody has actually pleaded guilty to it, that's just going to embolden folks to use it more, I think, unfortunately.
Well, in sort of the opposite end of the spectrum here, Jim Ryan, CEO of Party Gaming, says his company has established an office in Los Angeles with 40 employees and is preparing to re-enter the U.S. market when and if the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act is repealed. So there you go. There you have it. You have, you know, one guy saying, all right, I'm guilty of the Wire Act, and now you've got, hey, we're hoping the UIGE goes away. They're not going to get any stronger than they are with this other kind of stuff, and we're going to be ready for it when it happens. So that's encouraging.
Yeah, I think that's a big step. I mean, obviously, you're not going to set up an office over here, hire that many employees if you don't have an indication that you think that things are going to be favorable at some point. So
imagine being one of those employees.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, what do you do? I mean, it's kind of like, you know, in that startup phase of something that's going to take 5 or 10 years to launch, you know.
They're like playing darts and, you know, making paper footballs and playing, you know. What? Hey, man, what do you want to do today? I don't know. Let's make a rocket ship out of Starbucks cups. You know, I mean, what the hell?
Oh, man, that's great. Well, we need to get jobs there. Maybe we'll just move Andy up out to L.A.
Yes.
All right, finally, Chris, this week, the World Series of Poker has scheduled its first event on the African continent, planning a two-tournament event in October at the Emerald Resort in South Africa.
Now, you just know that Matt Damon had something to do with this.
he invited us to an event down there?
Exactly.
All right, okay.
World Series, this is your time. This is your moment.
So I wonder if Morgan Freeman will be there, too, then.
Yeah, do you think that, you know, Nelson Mandela wants Matt Damon to win that event?
Wouldn't that be great to see Nelson Mandela at the final table?
I want him to say, shuffle up and deal. That would be awesome. All right, well, we're going to skip right over our mailbag segment. I mean, our hotline segment, sorry.
We already did it. We're not skipping it over.
Yeah, you throw me all off here. We're rearranging things today. But we're going to skip over the hotline because we already did it, and we're going to go right to our mailbag. And this is a weird mailbag. It's almost as if it's a hand of the week.
Yeah, yeah. Chris, this comes from Chris Christofko, and he said it isn't hand of the week. As you'll hear as we detail it, it is probably not hand of the week worthy, but it is worthy of discussing nonetheless. So, hey, it becomes a mailbag. See, we just repurpose things here at Antioch.
That's cool, man.
All right, here we go. It was a satellite for a $55 tournament, turbo satellite, two-minute levels, first
Jeez.
Five players getting seats. Yeah, two-minute levels. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
First five players getting seats, remember. Sixth place gets nothing. There are six players remaining. So let's do some quick math at home. You know, if you're listening in your car, pull over. Six players left. Five get seats. We need to eliminate one player. Everybody else gets the same prize. All right?
Okay.
Stack sizes, 2160, 5660, 195. Remember that? 195, 2895, 2655, 3435. All right. So blinds are 300, 600 with a 75 ante. Remember, the short stack has 195. That's not a mistype. I'm not a Wall Street trader. It is 195.
Oh, man.
All right. So our hero here, Chris, was dealt king-king in the small blind. Very nice hand. Folds around the short stack, who sticks in his last 195. Of course, our hero calls, which, of course, he has to call the full 600 on small blind. Big blind, Chris, shoves. Shoves. Now, the big blind has 3,435 chips. Shoves. Of course, our hero folds. As it turns out, big blind had ace king. Shorty had queen eight. Board ran out. Queen five, eight. Wait for it. Wait for it. King eight. Meaning if had big blind not got crazy, he and our hero check it down. Boom. Everybody wins tickets. Shorty goes home. So Chris writes in, what are your thoughts on hand? Was he wise to fold his king-king? And is the shove as dumb as he thinks it is on the part of the big blind?
Well, let's talk about the big blind. Did he not pay his entry fee into this little satellite?
Oh my gosh, you are not going to go down this
road. Does he not have the right to play this hand the way he wants to play the hand?
Oh my gosh, I am not feeling bad for you losing money ever again if you continue with this line of questioning, counselor.
Of course I'm being facetious. Yeah, you know, the thing about the king hand, though, I guess I have to fold there. They've talked about that before, about, folding aces, yeah. I guess you have to fold, but, oh my God, you know what? I would have my chat privileges banned after what I would say to this guy when it was all said and done. Especially if I didn't win a seat, I would follow this guy around the internet and just bother him for months because of what he did.
Here's why the king is a very easy fold here. I mean, the big blind has him covered.
Yeah.
So even though you have a strong hand and you think the big blind's being crazy, it doesn't matter because you're trying to get rid of the small blind. And, if the small blind is a big blind has you beat, but the small blind doesn't, I mean, if it does, I'm so pissed off. I can't even get the story out straight. If you finish third in this hand, you're out. You're out. And that small blind, even if he wins, is only going to have another, he's only really going to triple up
like 600 maybe, about 700.
It's going to be like, all in on the next hand, essentially.
Yeah.
There's just no upside. And, here's the thing. I've argued about this before, this big blind move. And some people say, well, it's good. Sometimes you get, like, extra frequent player points, even though you get the same price. Stupid.
Man, I don't think I've ever heard that argument before. Oh, my God.
Stupid. I don't care how many frequent player points you get or, whether you're trying to get a little star on your avatar or impress the girl that you're trying to get in her pants or whatever. There's no argument that justifies shoving with 34 of 35 against a short stack with any hand, particularly ace-king.
Oh, man. You're all worked up now. And I have to work with you the rest of the day.
This is just ridiculous.
That's it, Chris. I'm not happy with you sending in his hand. Now you've got my partner all mad, and I'm going to have to work with him all day. He's going to be all mean to me and everything. This is not good.
Hey, I'm just using an artistic license here.
All right, so we agree the Kings should have folded, but the other guy was an idiot, and hopefully Chris still won his seat anyway because he played wisely. And now we're going to give him something for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, you got a brand new item on our swag shelf, a free download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro. It's a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net. If you go to that website and use code AU15, you'll save some cash.
Pretty exciting stuff, man. I didn't even know about it. I love when you introduce these swag products and don't even tell me about it.
Yeah, it's a new product developed by a friend of one of our longtime listeners. So
maybe I'd want to send in something for the show as under an alias and win this product. Maybe you should let me know next time.
Maybe. Or you could just go to element26.net and buy it. Come on, don't be cheap.
All right, well, now we get to the special part of the program. We get to solve the 100th mystery of Columbo's
Did you
long
say salve?
Run. Salve.
No, you said salve, like salve my heart. And the only reason I bring that up is because I'm usually the one mangling the words and you always make fun of me.
It's
so
true, it's true.
I gotta hop on it when I get these rare opportunities to.
Well, it's hard to stress the word solve when you're saying it long and, solve his 100th mystery. Case of the world's biggest hand. Let's hear part one.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is the 100th one-minute mystery, the case of the world's biggest hand. It's very, very late in an online multi-table tournament. So late, in fact, that of the 1,800 runners, just 45 remain. The blind level is 2,500, 5,000, with an ante of 600.
Sir, could I have a moment of your time?
We are playing for a minimum of 13K in chips each rotation. Stack sizes at the table range from 93K to 250K. Except for us. We have 434K and are currently second overall in chips.
So far, it's the results of hard work.
We are at a full table of nine when the first three players fold and we peek at Jack of Diamonds, Jack of Hearts. We're going to stay consistent here and raise it up 2.5 big blind to 12-5 and then watch the hijack fold and the cutoff raise us to 40K. The button folds, the blinds fold, and it comes back around to us, and we need some time to think about this.
I am thinking about it, sir.
There are a maximum number of options here, all with merit. We could just chuck the jacks, we could re-raise and risk 100K and see if he's ready to go to the wall with his hand, or we can call and see what the flop tells us. I call the 27-5. The pot is 93K, and we see a flop of 4 of spades, 4 of diamonds, 3 of diamonds. I lead out for 50K, leaving 344K behind. But my opponent then pushes his remaining 206K into the pot.
Well, I know you're busy, and I took up enough of your time already. Just one more thing.
What do you think he has, and what are you going to do?
All right, well, I guess I always go first, so you can always react.
Okay.
It's just the way it is.
Okay.
All right, so here's what I say. Total gut check time, Chris.
I agree.
All right, our opponent can easily have an underpair of jacks. Just as easily as he can have queen, queen, king, king, ace, ace. We've invested about a fourth of our massive stack in this pot. And we're looking at 300,000 in the pot, I think, correct? If we fold, we still have a very respectable 350,000. If we call and win, we're up to a dominating 693. In a tournament, we're already well in the money. And the top prices have to be very juicy. And even if we call and lose, we're still at 138K, which is well above life support. So I'm going to say I am surprising the nation because I think this is an easy call.
Wow.
I folded 99 one-minute mysteries in the history. It's a special occasion. It's the 100th. And I am going to call this time.
Well, how can you say at the beginning of your answer that it's a gut check and then say it's an easy call? Those are two, you know, those terms totally are contradictory.
Well, because it's gut check when you're presented with the situation, when you break it down as brilliantly as I just did, it is no longer gut check time. It's an easy call. How's that?
Oh, that's another artistic license there. all right, I got three letters for you. U-G-H, UGH. I think it's an easy fold, to be honest, though. I would still have an M of 27 if I folded. I'd be in great shape. And would this guy really shove with two cards to come without a four or a bigger pair here? I just don't think so. So I'm not sure what he has, but jacks suck. They cost me like $120 last night in the cash game. They're going to cost Colombo his tournament here if he calls. So I'm saying fold.
Well, I totally agree with you that jacks are the devil's hand. But and, you know, I can make a case for folding. I mean, it's a safe way to play. But, you know, hey, you know me. I'm a gambler.
That's right. You are.
I'm in every pot. I'm not folding. I'm just crazy. That's the way I am. So,
as evidenced last night with your ace rag.
King rag.
Or king rag. Yeah, king rag. Sorry.
Even worse.
I'm so used to saying ace rag. I never even think about playing king rag.
Hey, it was in the bike blind. It's a cosmic thing. I went over to the forum, and it's almost unanimous a fold, which just confirms that I have no idea what I'm saying. People just tune into the show just to see what crazy stuff I'm going to say. Though, most everybody, and these are my words, they didn't say this, but I believe they gave a polite rebuke to our hero Columbo for the way he played the hand, had he played it differently. Perhaps a fold was not necessary. But they're mostly folding. The rabid dog is on my team. So rabid dog, wherever you are, let's go.
Yeah, you want to do a virtual chest bump with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's hear the conclusion.
Welcome back. Wow, what looks like a great flop turned sour. But my bigger issue here is that I don't put him on an overpair. I can't be sure, but I am not expecting queen-queen through ace-ace to shove here. So what the heck does he have? This gives us a reason to call. On the other hand, if we were to remove the cards from the formula and we were to just watch from afar the bets and the transactions without the benefit of whole cards or the board, what conclusion would we come to? Not a good one. This gives us a reason to fold.
Do we know if we wanted to be here or not?
There are 90K of our chips in there, but we are still healthy, and a pair is just a pair. Unless you have a really good read, it's just not that critical of a call. Of course, he could know that. You know what? There is no answer here that I like. I'm just going to go back in time and fold the jacks. Until next time, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.com.
All right, wait a minute. Cut the music. I had to stop the music, Scott. Usually...
Cut on the set. Cut.
Usually we let the music go. We go into our nice little PokerStars commercial and then introduce our, you know, main topic or whatever. But I got to say something here. Are you kidding? Is Columbo really saying that he shouldn't even play Jax now? I mean, you know what, Scott? You're the biggest wuss in the show. But but if Columbo could actually do that, he would be the biggest wuss in the NEP Nation.
I mean, there's no time machine in poker either. He's not Keanu Reeves, man. He's not Bill or Ted. So let's just get rid of that whole thing.
Bill or Ted. I would rather you say, like, Christopher Reeve in Somewhere in Time. That was a much better movie than Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, you know?
Oh, my God, you are totally a chick. Totally a chick.
But, you know, I mean, you have to play the Jacks. I think he played him well up to that point. But to say he wanted to just, oh, my God, I made a mistake. Let me go back in time and fold Jacks, getting a premium hand like that, I tell you what, if Columbo were here right now, I would slap him.
And what if I am here?
Whoa! Maybe he is Bill and Ted. How are you doing this?
I've been watching a lot of Lost, and it allows me to travel around at will.
Oh, I want to know what's in the hatch. Oh, wait, that's like 7 seasons ago. Sorry, I don't know what's going on with that show. Columbo, thank you so much for joining us today. Congratulations on your 100th mystery. We wanted to do something a little special for you, so thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Thankful. It's been pointless as well as fruitless.
All right. So what are you trying to talk about here at the end of this mystery, going back in time and fold? You can't fold this hand, right?
No, I can't. And I can't at least back in time pre-flop. And I was so disgusted with what I should do versus what I did. And many players, and I am putting myself firmly in this category as of late, have an issue with not playing the idol, as they say in Survivor. We build this elaborate escape route, and then fire breaks out, and we stand there and run right into the flames. You know, I built this hand beautifully. I know either I'm way ahead or way behind. I know if I check, he's just going to crush me, so I lead out. And he has to basically tell me whether he beats me or not. He's not going to bluff me here. I put the lead bet out. I tell him I'm strong. He comes over the top, and I know that the jacks are no good. Yet, for some inexplicable reason, I stare at that board, and I say, there's no way that he just outflopped me. So either he has aces, and I'm crushed, or I'm way ahead. I should fold here, but I call. And it turns out, for some elaborate plan on his part, he tried to re-steal with ace four off.
Yes.
The re-steal fails, and yet the flop comes and puts a giant platter of gold right there in his lap.
Why is Scott saying, yes, we lost?
Because he was trying to re-steal. That's what I was trying to get at. Of course, you know, but we were dead at on the flop. But
yeah, so you could make an argument that, you know, you can't allow people to just re-steal you and get away with murder. I understand that, but, you know, my point was, if I was gonna defend against the re-steal, I had an opportunity to do it. I passed on it. I got real unlucky. That's true. But I also paid him off, which was probably not the best. So, you know, you could make an argument that I played it okay, but there was an escape hatch there. I ran to the escape hatch. The alarms were blaring. I pushed the button, and then I watched the pod launch out, and I was still waving from the space station. So I could only kick myself.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit more about this, because as I just previously mentioned before we played the clip, the forum was almost unanimous in folding here. And they're also unanimous in the exactly what you know, is that you kind of bungled the escape hatch and forced yourself into a situation where you had to fold here. But my contention was that we were in the money already, right? Pretty far in the money, correct?
Well, remember, everything's going to be front-loaded to the final table.
Exactly.
So even though there's 35 people left, your payout is maybe 3x buy-in at this point.
Right. So we're still playing for the win.
Yes, so, you've achieved the moral victory at this point, but nothing more than that.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is at this point, this is where people like me fail in tournaments, is that we get scared, we're in the money, we're safe, and you know what? I don't really like the situation, I'm going to fold. And then people keep abusing you and abusing you and abusing you when you do that, when you need to make that big score and put yourself in a position where you're really playing for the big money. So that's why, even though maybe I'm going behind here, I'm going to call, because you've got a second escape hatch here in the fact that you still have enough chips left to play.
Well, if that's true,
you lose, you're not like shoving on the next hand.
Sure, and you're making the argument that I made in my little brain when I was thinking to myself, how could I possibly call here? Well, it'll be a lot of chips. Well, of course, if I win the hand, there's going to be a lot of chips. I don't think that anybody could doubt that. It's a big pot. And if you have queens or better, I think it's really easy to get that money in pre-flop and make that four bet and come over the top of him and just shut it down. But with jacks, for some reason, it's one of those hands where you always feel like, oh, am I going to see a flop or am I going to be crushed here? And right. If you're willing to go to the wall with jacks because you think you've got him beat, then why not do it before the flop?
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Because nothing's going to change on the flop if he's got a bigger pair. And if he's got ace king, he's not going to lay it down, which is, you know, some of the reason that jacks want to see a flop there, because would you really want to race with 35 people left with the only other stack that's your size? You know, I was really in a tough spot there in terms of, am I playing the big stack right, versus am I playing just correctly? And I thought it was a really, really good hand to just sit there and dissect. And as a matter of fact, I have in my office a map of, you know, that looks something like out of The Beautiful Mind, that is basically posts and notes and everything that I'm going to have to tear down now.
From somewhere in time?
No, nothing from H.G. Wells' Time Machine, nothing from any of those. But the Bill and Ted reference. Oh, thanks for aging us all.
That's what I do, man. That's what I do.
Well, it just occurred to me, too, that waiting in our green room is Joe Catta, who is a fellow Michigan man. So I thought that was interesting. It's an all-Michigan show today. Must be killing Scott.
You know, that's all right. That's all right. You know, because nothing kills me with Michigan anymore, because it's going to take them a good 20, 30 years to dig out of the hole that Rich Rodriguez has carved into them. So at this point, I just feel bad picking on him anymore.
All right, well, before we let you go, Columbo, I'd like to know how things are going with you. You know, checking in with you live for only the second time. The last time was our 100th show. So now we're checking in with you on your 100th episode. So how are things at the detective household?
Well, it's interesting. I think my life is a lot like the fact that I'm wearing a Lions hat right now. There's always optimism. And there's always next year.
Oh, man.
And we continue to improve. But, you know, we haven't hit the home run yet. So I think that's pretty much an indication of life in general. I got no complaints. I've got a lot of room for improvement. But by and large, I could be in a bad place that I'm not. So, you know, things are good. And nothing thrills me more that, you know, Antiup continues to thrive and grow. And that's just awesome. I love when people I know succeed. That's just the greatest.
Well, we appreciate it.
Making us blush.
And, you know, the first right move you made was firing Matt Millen as your captain. So now you have room to move up the police ladder, too. So hopefully that'll work out for you.
I think it will. Yeah, I think that was a pretty solid move all around.
And, of course, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't thank you for all the contributions you've made to Antiup and what's made it a success. I can't tell you how many times we get letters and emails from folks that say, whenever you do the show, don't mess it up and lose Columbo.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you for the $12 T-shirt. I appreciate that.
Hey, we're going to send you some patches soon, too, so don't forget about that.
That costs $12.
Oh, great, great. There's nothing I like more than free advertising for my otherwise free contributions.
Hey, Ray, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that PokerStars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our PokerStars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
With the World Series about to start in a couple of weeks, we thought what better way to prepare for this than to have the youngest world champ ever on the show. So without further ado, Mr. Joe Catta, thanks for joining us on the Ante Up Nation today.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, so really, how was your year as the world champ?
It's basically been a whirlwind, taking it one step at a time. Not too much has changed.
What was it like being on Letterman?
I was pretty nervous for a lot of it. I'm not the best in front of cameras.
Now, were you more nervous with that than you were in the series?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, I watched that interview, too, and I just felt like saying, you know, come on, Dave, that is not how poker is played, you know. Does it ever bother you when these guys interview and they really just don't understand the game at all?
No, it's all right. I mean, I'm kind of used to that. I hang around a lot of people that don't play poker or don't know much about poker, so I've been pretty used to it through the years.
What was the first thing you did when you got back home to Michigan after your win?
Some relax. I mean, I had to do a lot of interviews right after, and everything was kind of hectic at first and very busy. So when I got home, I kind of just took some time away and just relaxed a little bit.
Did it take winning the world title to win your parents over to your poker, or did they come around before that?
They came around before that. I've been doing it for a living for about 4 years now. So I don't know, after the first year or so, they started coming around a little bit.
Now, speaking of your supporters and stuff, you know, the shirts that, I guess you had about 100 people there, they're all bright yellow, so I guess it's no secret you're a Wolverine. Will you let us continue interviewing you, even though Scott is a diehard Buckeye?
Yeah, it's all right.
Probably particularly after this season. So. Now that you have your relationship with PokerStars, how glad are you that you switched from UB for the November 9?
I'm really happy. Before I was even signing with PokerStars, I made it clear on the radio that I wanted to be with Stars and I wanted to sign with Stars, and I was very happy that they gave me the opportunity to be part of the team.
Can you tell us how that came about, how that relationship developed?
Well, I mean, the UB deal was a one-day deal, and it was kind of fast because, you know, you get new tables from, there's, I think, about, like, 30 people left, and, you know, everyone's coming up to you asking you to wear patches and stuff like that, and you're kind of focused on playing, and UB was one of the few sites that offered a one-day deal. I didn't want to sign with anyone right away, and then I was kind of holding off for Stars once I hit that final table.
Well, you know, speaking of the final table, when you won, you were 21, obviously the youngest champ ever, and now you're 22. But, you know, most 21-year-olds, they spend their time basically wondering when their next meal is coming, and you're a millionaire world champ now. So what has that transition been like? I know you won a bunch of money before that, but really, now that you're pretty much set, what has that been like for you at such a young age?
I mean, it's a lot less stressful playing for that. It's a lot easier to go play a lot of these main events, and if you lose, it's, you know, not 10,000. I mean, it's 10,000, but it doesn't hit you as hard. But I don't know. I guess it's just been a lot more easy going.
All right, we had Darvin Moon on the show last month, and he told us that he expects to make the November 9 again this year. Are you ready to make such a bold prediction?
I mean, that'd be awesome, but the variance involved in these big tournament fields are very heavy, so I mean, I'm going to try to play my best poker, and if it came down to that, that'd be pretty ridiculous.
Well, you know, he seems real confident. What did you think of Moon's play?
I thought Moon did a good job for him saying that he wasn't really an experienced player. I think he threw a lot of people off with some of the lines he took in hands, and I think he played well.
So what are your plans for the series this year? Obviously, you said you have enough money, you don't have to worry about buy-ins. Are you going to try to play as many events as you can, or are you picking and choosing?
I'm going to be playing all the Norman and Omaha events. I'll definitely get second better to mixed games. Those are the two games I'll be playing at the World Series, and I'll try to make all of them.
Well, some people may not realize, but you had three caches last year at the series. Were you surprised by that many caches, or were you going in with that kind of goal and expecting that?
I mean, I guess my in the money percentage on mine is fire. I'm like 18%, and I played about 16 tournaments. So, I mean, it's right around there.
Okay.
I had a really upsetting tournament right before the main. I thought so there was no one chance to win a brace, but there was like a couple thousand players, and I was down to the final 17 with like third in chips, and it was a pretty rough one. And it's kind of demoralizing at first, but who would have known that I would have won the main.
Now, it's kind of different now with the November 9 introduction that poker champions don't get an entire year to have the glory of being the champion. Are you getting sad that that your current reign is coming to a close?
No, I'm excited for the 2010 winner. I mean, there's a lot of, interviews and a lot of pressure lately, and everyone's looking at how you're doing in tournaments and. You know, tournament's going to be rough because there's so many players, so I guess it'll be a little less weight off my shoulders once there's a new one.
Now, since the main event, you've had one live cash at the PCA, and it was a pretty good cash, but that's really just about it. Were you distracted at all with the responsibilities of being, like, poker's ambassador?
I mean, I want to say so. I haven't really played in too many tournaments. I've played in, a few tournaments in PCA and played in Monte Carlo and Italy and the Venetian. I played about maybe like 8 or 9 tournaments, so one cash out of 8 or 9 is not that far off from, you know, normal.
Okay.
I mean, these tournaments are really high variance, so a lot of stuff has to go your way to for them to work out well.
Now, had you been traveling a lot before? Obviously, you're traveling more now. Has that been an adjustment to make?
Yeah, when I wasn't 21, I would travel to, I'd made some stops at like Costa Rica and Bahamas for the PCA before that, and then I was over in Aruba, so I did a lot of traveling when I wasn't 21 where I could play.
Alright, well, we mentioned being the face of poker for a year. What are your experiences been in support for online poker politically and legally as we try to get kind of a firm approval for it here in the States?
I made a few trips to Washington already and met with some congressmen and senators and talked about poker a lot, and I've been trying to contribute, and it's a step that hopefully all poker players are hoping for, that the law passes. I mean, it's a really big step right now, so I think we're getting a lot closer to passing it.
Now, you know, people will always think of you as the youngest champ, but really, you've been a pro, like you said, for about 4 years or so. So tell us what were those days were like when you were a 19-year-old playing in Canada?
Canada actually had a pretty good game. It's not too far away from me. It's about 40 minutes away, and the big game that ran on the weekends was a pretty good game. It was 10-20, no max buy-in, and I would make my occasional trip over there to, you know, play some live poker. Live poker is always fun, you know, taking a break from online. So, I mean, I had some rough swings through the course of a few years. I'm sure all poker players have, and I know I started off playing 10-10, 25-10 when I was just old enough to play online, and worked on my way up to 25-50 and 50-100.
Awesome.
All right. Well, you mentioned that you're going to play some Omaha events this year, and you're working up to mixed games. Are there other games that you enjoy playing? You just don't play at the same level. You do No Limit right now.
I wouldn't really say so. I like playing other games occasionally, like Stud and Raz and stuff like that. But that's not as good, and don't really even put them near the top. Time I do is in Omaha and No Limit, so hopefully I can get better at those games and play some serious events.
Hey, is it true you play indoor soccer?
Yeah, I've been playing soccer since I've been 4.
What position do you play?
Indoor, well, I probably play like left forward, but like outdoor, left mid or lefty.
Why do you think that soccer hasn't caught on in America like poker has?
I mean, it's a good question. I mean, I guess, all the other sports are much better spectator sports. I mean, soccer is kind of a little slower pace than football and basketball or NASCAR and everything like that is much more spectator sport in U.S. than in other countries. So I guess that would be maybe the reason.
Well, I've always had this theory that I can make it more exciting if I added another ball to the game. Would you object to that?
That'd be interesting. I never actually tried that.
Kind of like double flop hold'em, except it's soccer. I like it too. We're good.
Yeah, it's like throwing two foosballs and then playing foosball.
That'd be awesome.
Joe, tell us about Sixth Street Life After the River.
Yeah, it was a project that I was confronted with during the break of the final table and the month waiting. And I thought it would be a cool idea. Regardless, if it didn't work out, that it would be sweet to have some footage, just some like documentary footage or whatever, and or like a reality show. And I was confronted with the idea, and I did it for a little while. I'm still unsure about it because, I mean, let's just say reality shows aren't that fun to do. But it has its positive sides and other aspects. But we'll see how that goes. I'm still unsure if I want to continue with it or not.
All right, well, thank you for taking the time to answer our questions today. And are you going to stick around for our Hand of the Week?
Yeah.
All right, let's do that.
All right, Joe and Chris, this comes from a listener named Kevin Pryor. Doesn't say where he's from, so must be in the Witness Protection Program. and it's a online hand, a $4 tournament. Joe, when you started out, what stakes were you playing when you first started playing poker online?
I was playing 10 cent, 25 cent, and 5 cent, 10 cent cash in. Okay.
All right, so you're familiar with the $4 tournaments then. You're not too big for that now, right?
Yeah.
All right, great. All right, so he says it's the fifth hand of a $4 ten-handed sit-and-go, and he has 1,590 in chips. The villain in this hand has 1,480, so he's got him covered by a little bit. And the hand begins with a middle player calling. And he's on the hijack with jack of spades, nine of hearts. Is the hand worth playing, Joe?
I mean, it's really early, and it wouldn't be bad to raise and play your position, but I personally like developing a little tighter image at the beginning of sitting goes because, you know, 40 or 50 chips in the middle isn't as important as when you get in later stages in the sitting go where you can feel the blinds and you have that image develop where you're not raising every hand and you can get away with a little bit more.
Oh, very good point. Very good point. All right, so you'd be calling here?
If I'm coming to the pile, I'd like to raise that up a little bit.
Okay.
But, I mean, I guess any situation, I mean, calling or folding or raising, I mean, wouldn't be bad.
Okay. So you can pretty much go any way you want. So so he decided to call here. Folds around to the small blind, who raises to 60, which I'm guessing is a min raise at this point. And the first player in actually folds to that, and it gets to us.
All right. Does he call now?
Yeah, that's what he does. That's what you would have done?
He has position. You're playing deep, so... it's such a small raise that after limping, I would call.
Okay. Now, what do you start when you're playing sit and goes like this, and you get a raise from the small blind? What do you start thinking about in terms of what your opponent might have, or do you even think about that this early in the hand?
I always think about that. At this point, I think it's really early in tournament, and for someone to be raising out of position with such a small blind level, and after two people looping, I would. Actually a pretty big hand here.
Okay. All right. The flop comes. We call. We're heads up now, obviously. The flop is king of hearts, jack of hearts, ten of hearts. And again, we have the jack of spades and the nine of hearts. And our villain bets out 100.
I like flat calling here because you're not really going to get any... you're not going to get any better hands to fold, and you're only going to get worse hands to fold, and there's not too many cards that hurt you. So I think calling's fine here.
Joe, one of the things that I think a lot of our listeners struggle with is these flops that come all of one suit. Obviously, it helps that we have, the nine of hearts at least, so we have another out here. But how worried are you when you see flops that are this coordinated?
mean, it all depends on the hand range that you're putting the person on preflop. I mean, just because there's three hearts out there doesn't necessarily mean he has a heart. I mean, there's a more likely chance that he doesn't have a heart than does. So I'm not really too worried. I played a little bit cautiously depending on the hand.
Okay, great. All right, so the villain did bet 100. We called, and we go to the turn, which is the 9 of diamonds. So our board now is king of hearts, jack of hearts, 10 of hearts, 9 of diamonds. And the villain bets 500 into us.
Looks like an overbet, isn't it? Since he's got 100 on the flop, and it was 60 pre-flop.
320, yeah, 320 plus the big blind, and yeah, so probably about 350, 360 in the pot. So it's more than a pot-sized bet, yes.
I'm not playing golf. I mean, it's early in the tournament, you only need 160 chips here, and you're still left with 1430. If you call 500, I mean, you're drawing to a hand that you don't even necessarily know if it's good or not. So I think it's a fold in this situation.
Okay, well, it's the Emerald Hand of the Week. If folks fold this early, so our hero does make the call, and the river is the Ace of Hearts. So our final board is King of Hearts, Jack of Hearts, 10 of Hearts, 9 of Diamonds, Ace of Hearts. So we've made our flush, and the villain bets 200 now after betting 500 on the last street.
I mean, after lowering the bet, once the heart came out, I mean, after calling the turn, I'd have to ship for value on the river after making the flush.
Yeah, because the only hand that beats us is a royal, really, so...
Yeah, there's only one card in the whole deck that beats you.
Yeah.
All right, so you chip for value here. All right, that is exactly what our hero does. He shoves for 960. The villain calls and turns over Queen of Diamonds, Queen of Hearts.
Well, Joe, you were right. It was a huge hand to start, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's why I would probably hold the turn. I mean, but whatever. I guess if you learn from your mistakes, it's never a bad mistake.
Well, that's a great laydown, too, on the turn, though. So that's a good laydown.
Joke, how do you deal with hands like this where at the end, I mean, obviously, you probably made a tactical error calling on the turn, but on the river, as you said, he should have shoved, and that's what he did. And then just the one hand that could beat you comes out. I mean, how do you deal with coming back from a situation like that? That happens to a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you're going to make mistakes in poker. That's just how it's going to be. And the biggest thing about poker is learning from your mistakes. And just because you made a wrong decision in a hand, maybe won't necessarily be a mistake. It's really good to go over your hands and hand analysis with other people and think of other people, listen to other people's logic. And, you know, hear two sides of it and actually go over and see what you did, if it makes sense or not. And I think that's the biggest success I had to getting better.
All right. Well, Kevin, we appreciate your sending your hand of the week in, and we'll be happy to send you a $10 staking package from getastake.com. And if anybody else has hands of the week for future shows, please email them to podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
Joe, thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate it. I want to wish you all the best out at the series this year.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. And thanks for having me.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Take care.
Take care, Joe. Appreciate it.
All right, another good show. Joe on the show, man, he was right on there at the end. You know, even though he had two pair and he had the second nut flush draw, he knew to let it go, and turned out he would have been right.
Yeah, yeah. It's always amazing, you know, when we break down these hands, just the thought process we get from people that are markedly better at this game than we are, Chris.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, if he was in Beau Rivage last week, he would have known that the one outer would have hit on the turn, and he would have saved all of my money. So I'm going to ask him if he'll come around with me when I play from now on.
That's what you need. You need a little pop-up Joe Cat iPhone app.
Yeah, exactly. No, no, no. Don't bet here. No, no, no. It'll, like, ring in my ear, you know.
Don't do that.
All right. I'm Chris Cassenza. I'm Chris Cassenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. contact us at podcast@anyupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@anyupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Hello, is this the detective?
It is.
Hello, Detective Columbo. This is Chris Crescenza and Scott Long on the line.
Who?
Hey, we're having a domestic dispute. If you could bring that beat-up car over here and put the cuffs on this guy.
As long as you drive over my partner on the way out of the parking lot.
Caller, this line is for emergencies only.
Now, you say you want to go back in time and fold, right?
Well, you know, that's really a cop-out because you can't not play the hand, right? You're
right.
A big if you fold jacks pre-flop just because it's, you know, towards the end, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't do that and probably can't use the word pussy. So,